All right, I'm going to veer away from the sports world for a second. I want to have a discussion. I want to open it up. Jacob, I want you to get involved here. I want to talk to our listeners, 913-586-7965. Has there ever been a show or a movie, like in your life, where you heard all this talk, all of this hoopla and adulation about it, but you were always like, really? Like, is it really that? Like, is it really that good? And then one day you up and decided, all right, I'm going to watch it. I'll watch the movie. I'll sit down and catch a few episodes of the TV show, and immediately kicked yourself for having waited that long to watch it. I asked this question because I have done this several times in my life. Most notably, Game of Thrones. My parents were obsessed with Game of Thrones, and I never bought into it. I never was one of those. I never really bought into the hype of Game of Thrones. Everybody's talking about it. It's the most popular show on TV, but like, is it really that good? It's dragons and all these different things. I never really bought into it. And then one summer while I was in college, my parents decided that they wanted to go back through and rewatch Game of Thrones before the next season started. And I was like, okay, I'll watch it with you. And admittedly, it was slow going at the start. I mean, spoiler alert for somebody who hasn't watched the show, which ended 5-6 years ago. There are some rough stretches in that first season. Like, I could only watch like 2 or 3 episodes a night, because you would hit that. One of the first episodes that I really remember like being taken aback by was the episode where the king, Robert Baratheon, it's unveiled that his children aren't really his children, and that he might have some other children that were, you know, not between him and his wife Cersei, that might have a stronger claim to the throne than blah, 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 blah. So they kill all this guy's illegitimate children, all of them. It was horrifying. And I'm like, yeah, I'm done. I'm done for the night. There's another one where a guy is like, has gold, melted gold, like poured onto his skull, and he dies. There's a few of them where you're like, dear God, I need a minute. But eventually you get into it, and it was one of the best shows I've ever watched. And I've rewatched it a couple of different times now. Admittedly, I didn't get into Ted Lasso until season 2. I heard all about it in season 1, and I'm like, but it's about soccer. And if you love soccer, you love soccer. I don't know a lot about it, and I need to learn more, and I want to learn more. I just don't know a lot about soccer. So I was hesitant to watch it until finally I was like, you know what? I watched Jason Sudeikis for years on SNL. He's a Kansas City guy. I'm going to watch it. And top 5 television show that I've ever watched in my life. Recently, I have gotten into, and this is one that is going to, like, people are going to think that I'm weird for going back and watching the show that ended 20 years ago. I am watching The West Wing for the first time with, you know, Rob Lowe and Martin Short, and because I'm a huge history guy and I love political science and all those sorts of things. And I've watched several other series that are sort of adjacent to it. These are like political thriller sort of a shows. This one isn't necessarily a political thriller. It's sort of an inside baseball look at politics and really a detailed look. It's not, I've watched Scandal and Designated Survivor and House of Cards and Madam Secretary and other shows of that nature that are politically motivated. But again, they were more like political thrillers than they were political centric kind of shows. And I have to say, I'm blown away with The West Wing. I'm in season 6 right now, and I started watching this show like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Like, Jacob, have you had moments like the TV shows or movies like that where you were like, there's no way it's that good, and you waited and waited and waited until one day you were channel surfing or you were trying to scroll through a streaming site, and you're like, you know what? I've procrastinated this long enough. I'll sit down and watch it. And you were like, this is one of the best things I've ever seen on television.
So you took my answer in Ted Lasso.
Mm.
So that was the main one that I've recently watched. A couple years ago, about a year and a half ago, I saw clips on TikTok, and it finally drove me into watching a full episode of House.
Oh, really? Yeah, I've never seen it. I've heard it's fantastic, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, I mean, and his, like, just his sense of humor I can relate with, so it's one where it took me for a while to catch full episodes, and then I binge-watched, like, four or five of the, and that's the thing, it has, like, eight seasons worth.
That's a lot. That's a lot. And eventually, you know, there's so many shows out there that I'm like, oh, I'd love to watch that someday. But there's so much out there now. Like, the amount of television shows and movies, it's so saturated now that it's so hard because you're like, oh, I really want to watch that. But you've got half a dozen other things that are also going on at the same time that you want to watch. And it's sort of, you only have so many hours in the day. You only have so much attention span to give out. And it's hard to pull it away from other things.
Yeah, and I will say, movie-wise, I was waiting for a long time for the Deadpool Wolverine. That movie, I really enjoyed it.
It's solid.
It was definitely really good to watch in the theaters.
It's solid. It's absolutely. It's really, really good. I went and watched it in theaters with my wife, and it was really, really good. I want to go see Thunderbolts now, too. Maybe my wife and I will make it over there this weekend. Admittedly, massive Marvel nerd. Massive. My wife and I are actually rewatching the MCU in timeline order right now. She started without me. Honestly, that's grounds for her sleeping on the couch, first of all. How dare you? How dare you watch? Because I'm the Marvel nerd. Like, she started watching it because I love it. And now she's doing it. She's watching it without me? I'm not watching Twilight without her. That's not how this works.
That is brutal.
That's not how this works. Like, the only thing that would be worse is if she started watching Harry Potter without me, which she has also done. She's lucky I love her. We'd be in a phone booth. It'd be fisticuffs, I have to tell you. A couple of people in the text line are giving some suggestions here. Somebody said House is good, but it's the same thing over and over. It's a hospital show. It's hard to do different things. Eventually the material kind of, and I hate to say this, this is one that I pushed off for a long, long time, and I was forced to watch it. Grey's Anatomy. Big Grey's Anatomy fan in our household, and it's not me. And she watches it over and over and over and over again, and finally she broke me down. Like, I got her into watching Harry Potter, and I got her into watching the Marvel movies, and she's like, you know what? There's some things that you need to watch with me. Grey's Anatomy. Twilight. I'm like, okay. I have trouble with medical shows, really. Outside of, like, MASH, I love MASH. I know that makes me sound super old. I love that show. I grew up watching it with my dad. It's one of my favorite shows I've ever watched. So good. But I never really struggled with that because it wasn't incredibly detailed. Like, right, there wasn't a ton of blood and guts and gore going on with MASH, right? It was just like fake blood, but they never, Grey's Anatomy is very detailed. And that's one thing, everybody's talking about that show, The Pitt, now, that's on Amazon Prime. I've heard it's great. My parents have watched it. My brother and his girlfriend have watched. Everybody I've talked to has watched The Pitt, and they think it's great. And the concept of the show is fascinating. The entire season is one night in the ER. That's all it is. It's one night in the ER. It's a 12-hour period. Each episode is 1 hour inside of that ER, but it is incredibly, incredibly detailed. Like, there is a live birth in the show, like, stuff that's going to make me absolutely squirm. I don't know. But it's so hard with those medical shows because it does get a little bit monotonous where you're like, how many times can we show this differently before it's like, you just run out of material at a certain point.
Yeah, and that's why, like, in-house, they had a full season where he was in a rehab center.
Mm-hmm.
So they took a spin on it, and everything was going against him. So that created new content.
Yeah, you just got to kind of break it up. Suits had a very similar storyline with Mike, who, you know, he's a lawyer at this massive firm that only hires Harvard Law graduates, but he never actually graduated from Harvard Law because he got thrown out for cheating. And all of a sudden, he you know, fakes his way in. This guy hires him knowing that he's not a member of Harvard Law. And the show kind of goes along that route until somebody catches him and he goes on trial for not being a real lawyer. And there's some turmoil there for a season. And then he gets to come back. And so they kind of threw one in there in the middle of it to kind of break it up a little bit. And then eventually it sort of lost its luster. Newsroom is a fantastic show. I 100% agree. That's another one. That's another one I just started watching was Newsroom. I finished that a couple of months ago and I'd never seen it before. Heartbroken that it didn't last more seasons than it did. I think it was only two or three seasons and it should have been more than that, but I digress. Breaking Bad, best show of all time, somebody in the text line says. I couldn't get into it. I know. Some people are really going to hate me for that comment, but I really, really tried. I got about halfway through season one, and I couldn't keep it up, man. I just could not get myself fully invested into Breaking Bad. The Sopranos, somebody mentions The Sopranos. I felt the same way about The Sopranos. I couldn't get fully invested in it. The Wire, I never even attempted The Wire. I've heard that it's awesome, but I've never seen it. Please tell me you've seen True Detective season one. I've seen all three seasons of True Detective. Season one, that's must-see TV. Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey is so good. Season two's all right. The Mahershala Ali season, the flashbacks, I think, are a good introduction into the first couple of seasons. Season three of True Detective got a little bit strange, and I think that's kind of where they lost people, and that's probably why there wasn't a fourth season. Mindhunter, if you ever saw Mindhunter on Netflix, super good. Super good. And that was one that I didn't watch until after it had already been canceled after only a couple of seasons. And now there's a huge outcry to bring it back, and it's never done. You got to watch Generation Kill, too. I've seen that. It is sort of like an Iraq War version of like Band of Brothers in the Pacific. It's an HBO thing, and they've done these every few years, right? It started with Band of Brothers, and then they did the Pacific, then they did Generation Kill, and most recently they've done one, Masters of the Air, which was Apple TV. But that was really, really good. I enjoyed it. It's a hard one. If you like Arrested Development, try Better Off Ted. Two seasons, Portia de Rossi. It's just as good as seasons one through three of AD. Again, Arrested Development's another one I just couldn't get completely into. My mom really liked Schitt's Creek, but I couldn't buy into that one too. Sopranos, far and away the GOAT. Maybe I need to give Sopranos another shot, man. I don't know. I just could not like really, really like just like sink my teeth into it. I just couldn't do it. I don't know why. Somebody said Yellowstone. That's another one. My parents were in love with Yellowstone, and I didn't start watching it until after season three. Squid Game. Never saw Squid Game. Not sure I ever will. I don't know. I just can't. It's not that it's like foreign language, because I can get into a foreign language thing. Subtitles are a beautiful creation. I'm not too sure about the concept of the show that I could really do it. Friday Night Lights is a guilty pleasure. Solid show, dude. Solid show. And a lot of people hated the last couple of seasons of Friday Night Lights. Jacob, I don't know if you ever saw it. Friday Night Lights, so good. A lot of people hated it after they made the move from Dillon to East Dillon. I still really like the show. They brought like Michael B. Jordan in to kind of kickstart his career. I thought every season of Friday Night Lights was incredible. They're actually talking about bringing it back.
Mitchell in here is telling us he enjoyed the show.
I loved Friday Night Lights. I thought it was so good. All five seasons I enjoyed. All shows created by Taylor Sheridan. Yeah, he is batting 1,000 right now in terms of the shows that he's created. Yellowstone, 1883, I was sort of like, eh, but it was okay. 1923 is was really, really good. They just finished that series up. Season 2 was great. He did Lioness, which is really, really good, with Zoe Saldana. And most recently, he did Landman with Billy Bob Thornton, which is really, really good. Somebody just said, what about Game of Thrones? That's kind of what I led with, was Game of Thrones. That was one that my parents were all the way in on. And I was like, I don't know, I think it's kind of stupid. Until I sat down and watched it, and now I've seen it 3 times all the way through. I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about shows for a moment, because I've been on this weird kick of watching shows that were taken off the air, I don't know, 10 or 20 years ago. I've seen Newsroom, and now I'm watching The West Wing for the first time, a show that was taken off the air in 2006. Don't know why, but here we are. 913-586-7965 is the number. I promise you we'll get back to sports coming up next, including Caleb Williams, Chicago Bears. A little trouble in paradise there. We'll talk about that next right here on After Hours. How about a happy birthday to the legend, Mr. Royal? How about a happy birthday shout out to George Brett? Here on this May 15th, Royals legend turns 72 years old today. 21 years in the league, career 3,154 hits, second most by a third baseman in Major League Baseball history. And he's top 18 of all time. Best player to ever suit up in a Royals uniform. We can reevaluate that in about, I don't know, 15 plus years when Bobby Witt Jr. decides to hang it up. We'll see what happens. But yeah, big happy birthday to one Mr. George Brett. All right, let's get into this. Surprise, surprise, Caleb Williams reportedly, didn't want to be a member of Chicago Bears. Color me shocked. Also, why is anyone upset by that? Hey, Jacob, if you're Caleb Williams, would you have wanted to go play for the Chicago Bears?
With their history, I mean, I saw the comment that said, talked about that's where quarterbacks go to die, or at least their careers go to die. I mean, them and the Browns, but I don't think I would have, but I don't have that luxury.
For me, the answer is not just no, it is hell no. I don't want to go play for the Chicago Bears. What was the biggest meme that came out of the announcement of the new Pope and the fact that he was from Chicago? Oh, the city of Chicago got a Pope before a 4,000-yard passer. That is what quarterback play has looked like for the Chicago Bears forever, right? Jay Cutler is the organization's all-time leading passer at over 23,000 yards. And Jay Cutler had some solid years in Chicago. Do you want to know who the second leading passer in Chicago Bears history is? Sid Luckman, who threw for just over 14,600 yards. His last year of football was in 1950. He's the organization's second leading career passer, and he played his last season 75 years ago. Jim Harbaugh is third all-time in Bears history in passing. Jim McMahon is fourth. Mitch Trubisky is the fifth leading passer in Bears history. Mitch Trubisky! Yeah, Caleb Williams didn't want to go to Chicago. This isn't unprecedented. This isn't the first time that a quarterback's been like, I don't want to play for you. Jim Kelly famously went to the USFL to avoid playing for the Buffalo Bills. John Elway expressly said that he did not want to go first overall in that draft. Eli Manning got traded on draft day because he refused to play for the Chargers. This isn't the first time we've heard of something like this. According to the book written by Seth Wickersham, the book is called American Kings, a biography of the quarterback. Caleb Williams' father, Carl Williams, said, quote, "Chicago is the place quarterbacks go to die." That's what you were referencing earlier, Jacob. He said that in the months leading up to the 2024 draft. Caleb Williams was quoted as saying, "Do I want to go there? I don't think I can do it with Waldron." Referencing now former Chicago Bears offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. The book is expected to be published in September and covers a wide variety of quarterback topics. It includes access to and quotations from John Elway, Johnny Unitas, Warren Moon, the members of the Manning family, Peyton, Eli, and Archie, Steve Young, and also some current quarterbacks, including Drake May from the New England Patriots. Again, I understand the uproar or the hurt if you're a Chicago Bears fan. But come on, dude. Did you expect the guy to be jumping for joy at the prospect of playing for the Chicago Bears, who have been notoriously bad at quarterback? Not just quarterback play, but the way that they've handled quarterbacks. Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields, these guys that they've taken in the first round that they just mismanaged to holy hell. Williams' dad is quoted as saying, "I don't want my son playing for the Bears." Supposedly, he told that to several agents in 2024 in lead up to the NFL draft. Honestly, this looks like less of an indictment against Caleb Williams and more of an indictment against his dad, man. Some of the stuff he's quoted as saying it's kind of out there for the parent of a professional athlete. He's quoted as saying the rookie cap is just unconstitutional. Worst piece of bleep I've ever read. It's the worst in sports history. Caleb Williams apparently said that he wanted to go to Minnesota. He said, quote, "I need to go to the Vikings." "Let's do it," his father replied. Bears GM Ryan Poles stood firm, however, telling Williams, "We're drafting you no matter what." Yeah, no surprise to anybody. The quarterback didn't want to play for the Chicago Bears. They're bad, dude. Nobody wants to go play for the worst team in football. I don't know how to... I mean, people that are shocked by this are like, "Oh, I can't believe he would say something like that." Would you have been excited? If you were a guy of the talent of Caleb Williams, fresh off a Heisman Trophy and all the different things, did you want to go play for the Chicago Bears, a team that has never had a quarterback throw for 4,000 yards ever? Come on, bro. 913-586-7965 is our number. Much more coming up here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside producer Jacob Mustard. We're with you till 9 o'clock tonight, right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. We'll move over, Tom Brady. You're not the only former player that's got an ownership stake in an NFL team. Oh, you think you're special? No, not anymore. It's not an exclusive club any longer. NFL Hall of Famer Charles Woodson is reportedly buying a 0.1% stake in the Cleveland Browns.
Out of all teams.
Probably one of the cheaper teams to buy a portion of, right? Team with absolutely no playoff success in their careers.
Fair enough.
The agreement is contingent, according to ESPN, on Woodson, who works as an analyst for Fox Sports, agreeing to broadcast restrictions and removing his name, image, and likeness from his wine and whiskey business. It's interesting. So he can be... So he can't own an alcohol or a liquor label to own an NFL team. I'm not sure. Okay. Sure. Yeah. The NFL says absolutely not. You cannot own a whiskey company and be an owner of an NFL team. Oh, by the way, here's 4 Bud Light ads in the first quarter. What? it's kind of hypocrisy from the NFL there a little bit. Whatever. But yeah, Woodson joins an exclusive club that now includes he and Tom Brady, who also happens to work for Fox Sports, who had to agree to similar broadcast restrictions. Yeah, Woodson would have to remove his name from his wine and whiskey businesses because it would violate the NFL's policy on alcohol. Okay, let's take a look at the NFL's alcohol policy. The NFL has a policy that prohibits alcohol at team facilities and locker rooms and while traveling on team buses. And blah, blah, blah. The policy applies to all players, coaches, club personnel, and guests traveling with the team. I don't see what this says. That's stupid. All right. I can't believe that this is where I'm having to go with this. I'm trying to sit here and talk about Charles Woodson owning an NFL team, but instead I'm going to deviate off to the NFL and their hypocrisy. So Charles Woodson can't sell Woodson's whiskey. I have no idea if that's what it's actually called. It just kind of rolls off the tongue. That's my assumption. But the NFL can throw in a Jack Daniels, a Jim Beam, a Captain Morgan, 17 Bud Light ads, LL Cool J driving the Coors Light train into a bar, and 1,000 other things during their games. But Charles Woodson can't own 0.1% of the Cleveland Browns and have his name on a whiskey company? I'll be honest, I'll put it point blank, that's dumb as hell. That, what a weird hill to die on there, National Football League, Mr. Goodell. I don't understand. The distinction there makes absolutely no sense to me and makes you look completely and utterly hypocritical. Speaking of NFL ownership sales, the San Francisco 49ers are nearing a deal to sell over 6% of their stake in the franchise to three members of the Bay Area family. 49ers owner Jed York and other interested parties have approached his family to attempt to buy a piece of the 97% of the team that he currently owns. So of the 6%, it will go to three Bay Area families, including the, I apologize if I mispronounce some of these names, the Kosla, Dieter, and Griffith families. The Kosla is purchasing 3.1%, Dieter's at 2.1%, and the Griffiths acquiring 1%. Not sure if that means that they will be a part of the day-to-day process or anything of any time, of any part of this, other than just like, I'm a part owner of the team. Like, is that why you spent all this money? Is that why you have 3% of ownership in the team to say you own a part of the team? Because I can't imagine you are in the room making detailed, impactful decisions about the organization with that minute of an ownership stake. Maybe that's just me.
True, and at least the Bears don't have to worry about their ownership.
That's true.
Aaron Rodgers is retiring, or at least should be.
It's a good one. Aaron Rodgers is their daddy. I like that. I like the joke. As much as I hate Aaron Rodgers, that's a good joke. The Chargers are also requesting approval from the NFL to sell an 8% stake in their team to a private investment firm, citing a person with knowledge of the approval request sent in a memo to NFL owners. So we've got some ownership movement occurring in the National Football League. We've got ownership movement in the NBA. The Portland Trailblazers. Ownership group selling the team. Kansas City Trailblazers, anyone? No, it's not going to happen. Not viable enough, folks. I'm sorry. I don't think it's going to happen. None of the brands they market have an owner on the name. He can't afford their marketing fees. This is the ruling. Okay. So he would have to. Okay. I guess that makes some sense. Right. He's a part of the NFL. Therefore, I mean, Bud Light and Coors Light and all those companies, they do sell it to some extent. I don't know. It seems like a weird, that's a weird distinction. Like, why can't the guy continue to make money off of an alcohol brand that he owns? But it doesn't say that they're going to like make him sell it. They're just making him take his name off of it. So he'd still be the owner of it, but it's no longer Woodson's whiskey or Woodson's wine or whatever it is. I'm just going with the alliteration. I think that's a solid guess. So, I mean, speaking of the NBA, talking about the Trailblazers selling off, Let's talk about the NBA playoffs. A couple of big ones last night. Timberwolves were able to close out the Golden State Warriors in five, winning 121 to 110 behind a couple of big time performances for Minnesota. Anthony Edwards with 22 points. Julius Randle with a game high 29. The Warriors just could not deal with the loss of Steph Curry. I think it killed all of their momentum because they won game one of this series. In case we all forgot, they won game one. Steph goes down with the injury, misses a big chunk of game one, and then misses games two, three, four, and five ultimately. And the Warriors just were not able to solve it. Brandon Podziemski had 28 last night. Jonathan Kuminga had 26 off the bench, but a poor shooting night for a trio of guys for the Warriors. Draymond Green was 4 for 11. Jimmy Butler was 4 for 11. Buddy Hield was 2 for 9 as the Warriors lose 121 to 110. Drop the series in five games, and for the second year in a row, the Minnesota Timberwolves are heading to the Western Conference Finals, where they will await the winner of the Thunder Nuggets series. Game six going on right now. Halftime quickly approaching, and Oklahoma City is up 54-46. SGA, solid first half thus far. He's got 13 points on 4 of 6 shooting. Lou Dort with only 5 points in the first half, and he's only played 5 minutes so far in this first half, which is an interesting one. One thing to watch, though, is some foul trouble for this Thunder team. Jalen Williams, SGA, and Isaiah Hartenstein all have 3 fouls so far in this first half. Chet Holmgren, solid first half for him. He's got 8 points on 4 of 5 shooting. Nikola Jokic with 10, 5, and 3 in the first half. Jamal Murray, currently the game's second leading scorer with 11. The only other game we saw last night was the Celtics and the Knicks. What does this Celtics team look like without Jason Tatum? The Celtics are dead in the water. It's over for Boston. Enter Derek White, the undrafted free agent, bald-headed demon who chipped a tooth last year in the finals. Says, "Don't worry, guys, I got us." Goes off for 34 last night. 9 of 16 shooting. 7 of 13 from behind the arc. Made 9 of his 11 free throws to lead the entire game in scoring. Jaylen Brown had 26. Peyton Pritchard scored 17 off the bench. And how about Luke Kornet, dude? Who saw that coming? Who saw Luke Kornet playing 26 minutes in game 5 of an Eastern Conference semifinal, putting up 10 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 blocks? Luke Kornet just becomes Hakeem Olajuwon in the Eastern Conference semifinals? Unreal. Jrue Holiday had 14. Al Horford had 12. Kristaps Porzingis, his situation becomes more and more terrifying with every game, man. 12 minutes, he only played 12 minutes last night. He was 0 for 3 from the field. He scored 1 point. He had 1 rebound and 1 block. 2 turnovers and a foul. That was the stat line for Kristaps Porzingis last night. But man, I have to say, I don't think that we can just say that the Celtics are dead. You beat the Knicks by 25 last night without Jason Tatum. Do I think that they can win the NBA Finals now without JT? No, I don't. No, they're not beating the Timberwolves in a 7-game series. They're not. They're not beating the Thunder in a 7-game series, which I think that those are the two teams that are going to meet off in the Western Conference Finals. But do I think they can beat the Knicks? Do I think they can come back from down 3-1 and beat New York? Yeah, I think they can. Will they? It's unlikely, but they can. And if they get to an Eastern Conference Finals, I still think without Jason Tatum, they're a more talented team than the Indiana Pacers. As good as Tyrese Haliburton and Pascal Siakam are as a duo, and Obi Toppin's really come into his own, this Pacers team's fun to watch. I think that if they get a clean slate and they have a 7-game series to get to a finals and the Pacers are the opponent, I think they got a shot. Do I think it's going to happen? No. I think it's very, very likely that we see Knicks Pacers in the East and we see Thunder T-Wolves in the West. And we're going to see the beginning of a new era in the NBA a little bit, which we saw a little bit of that last year with the Celtics and the Mavs, obviously. But you had some, you know, Tatum and Brown have been around the league a long time and they've been competitive for a long time. Kyrie with the Mavs, that was something that, you know, we've seen Kyrie in the finals before. But you've got the Timberwolves, a team that has very rarely been in this position. The Indiana Pacers, who haven't been here since Paul George was a member of the Indiana Pacers. The Knicks, who haven't been this competitive since the days of Patrick Ewing, seemingly. The Oklahoma City Thunder, who haven't been to a Western Conference Finals or an NBA Finals since the days of Harden, Durant, and Westbrook. It's fun, man. It's fun to see some young stars pacing the league right now. You got Jalen Brunson and the Villanova guys with the Knicks alongside Julius Randle. And you've got, you know, a potential new face of the league in Anthony Edwards, right? You've got the Pacers with Tyrese Halliburton, who is somehow considered the most overrated player in the NBA by his colleagues, but is just continued to ball out. And then the Oklahoma City Thunder, which were one of the most exciting young teams in the history of basketball with SGA and Chet and Hartenstein and Jalen Williams and Lou Dort. I mean, that team is loaded for bear and they're so talented and they know their roles so well. It's going to be fun to watch the NBA, I have to say. I enjoy it. I know a lot of people don't, but I do. 913-586-7965. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap up the show next. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard right here on 96.5 The Fan. Sort of a strange way to close out the show tonight, but I want to come to the defense of an AL Central rival real quick. I know the Chicago White Sox are horrendous. They're a terrible baseball team. They have been for years, right? They broke the MLB record for the most losses in a season in the modern era of baseball. But can we give the White Sox a little bit of slack right now and focus our attention at how bad the Colorado Rockies are? Rockies lose last night 8-3 to the Texas Rangers. They've now lost 11 of their last 12 games, and they are 7-36. That is the worst win-loss record by a team in Major League Baseball through 43 games since 1900. They are awful. They have been swept for the seventh time this year, and it's the middle of May. Seven times in the middle of May. They fired their coach on Sunday, Bud Black, who's been there for years. They fired him. And they replaced him with interim manager Warren Schaefer, who is now 0-3 in his own right. Ryan McMahon, who was an all-star in 2024, said to his teammates, quote, just keep going. You've got to keep your head down. You've got to keep putting the work in. We've got a lot of areas we can improve in, obviously, and that's the only way we're going to improve. I wouldn't hold my breath. 7-36 to begin the year. Currently, the second worst team in baseball is the Chicago White Sox, who are 14-30. The White Sox are the second worst team in baseball, and they have twice as many wins as the Colorado Rockies. We are 43, 44, 45 games into the year at this point. They have scored 138 runs, which is far and away the fewest in baseball. Taking a look at the numbers, the White Sox have the second fewest. No, I take that back. They actually don't have the fewest number of runs scored in baseball. That's actually the Pittsburgh Pirates, who have scored only 135 runs. But the Pirates have only given up 189 runs. The Rockies have given up 275 runs. They are 5-16 at home, 2-20 on the road, and they have a point differential of -137, which is nearly double the second worst run differential in the game, which is the Baltimore Orioles at -74. Let's leave the White Sox alone for just a minute. And let's rag on the Colorado Rockies, because as bad as the White Sox were last year, historically bad, most losses by a team in MLB history, the Colorado Rockies are currently on pace to be even worse. Outside of Hunter Goodman, this team is bad, dude. He's hitting .291. He's got 6 home runs, 25 RBIs. Second on the team, Jordan Beck hitting .257. Nick Martini's hitting .253 and only 79 at-bats. Aaron Shunk is hitting .250 and only 20 at-bats. And then Kyle Farmer is fifth on the team, hitting .239. They're pitching. Also incredibly bad. Kyle Freeland with a 6 ERA. Anthony Senzatella is hitting, has an ERA of 6.3. Jermaine Marquez, 8.27. Chase Dolander, 6.88. My God. We can give the White Sox a hard time. Maybe back off just a little bit. The Colorado Rockies are even worse and are on pace to break their record of the most losses in a single season. Plus, lest we forget, the new Pope's a White Sox fan. There's that whole, you know, don't really want to be excommunicated. If we can avoid that, that'd be great. That'll do it for tonight's program. For my producer, Jacob Mustard, I'm Logan Weber. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you for getting involved in the text line, as always. Greatly appreciated. I love being able to communicate with you guys. We'll be back with you next week. We've got Royals baseball tomorrow night. No after hours on a Friday. We out.